T-minus 2. Sector 1, Great Shelter, New Kerguelen. From the moment Dan uttered these words, clarifying his thoughts and sharpening their impact in the minds of the onlooker messengers, the pace with which the situation escalated bordered on the unintelligible. The council meeting had been efficient, if unbalanced, faring well in comparison to any Earth-based counterpart, but the speed and forcefulness of the decisions that followed struck Dan as rash, reckless, and most definitely irresponsible. In the blink of an eye, quite literally, it was apparently decided between Leisha and Sacco that they were teleporting to the second shelter, and Dan and Billy were going with them. The lack of access to the instantaneous mental conversation that led to this decision was a huge frustration in itself, as, without knowing their logic for wishing to go, so far as there was likely to be any logic at all, Dan was in the dark as to how to try to talk them out of it. It wasn't just about talking himself out of it, which he didn't think would be too difficult since it seemed very unlikely Leisha in particular would ever force him into doing something he didn't want to, but also talking the messengers themselves out of diving in headfirst purely because they'd seen a shiny penny on the floor of the metaphorical pool. Surprising Dan by not only picking up on his metaphor, but actually building on it, Sacco replied that it was more like they had just spotted a shark in the pool and had to get everyone else out. Several thoughts entered Dan's mind at once, from the initial reaction of how foolhardy it would be to jump into a pool that contained a man-eating shark, to the secondary wonder of how Sacco even knew what a shark was, or if he perhaps even knew of Dan's specific and long-standing fear for those most streamlined and effective of all hunters. Both of those paled in comparison to the main thought that settled in their wake, however. In this metaphor, what the hell was the shark? "Our elders may be in danger," Sacco said, one of the last things Dan expected to hear. "To be specific, our forefathers who built the machines we have come to see as elders, they may be in the second shelter, and they may have run into trouble. Why else would they stop talking?"
"But why would they be talking to you over a radio that's so close?" Dan retorted. "I mean, the air outside is fine, and even if it wasn't, they know you can teleport. They do know you can teleport, right? Because they told you to do things, and they know what you can do?"
"Dan," Billy said, a troubling excitement dripping from even that single word,
"we can stand here all day and burn the old proverbial daylight, or we can go and see for ourselves, claim our destiny, answer the questions we hadn't even thought to ask, step into our bright future. All the stuff you always talked about with Elder Revival, this is it. This is it, Dan."
"You're worse than him," Dan replied. "Jesus, Billy, stop and think, will you? And this might be your destiny and your future, but my future is at home waiting for me to get back there to fix her, and I'm not going to risk my life barging into a structure we know nothing about. Anything or anyone could be in there. We need to observe it from the outside, ideally send a probe, then a volunteer, then—"
"We have no time for any of that," Sacco said.
Dan turned to Leisha. "Tell me you don't agree." Before a reply could come, a total white flash consumed Dan's senses. He couldn't believe it. After all he'd done for them, they would take him against his will and— or not. Dan thought to himself, realizing as the rapid flash subsided that he was still in the same room. Billy was there too, and most surprisingly, Sacco.
"He didn't want to risk your life," Sacco explained. "Not with the child waiting."
Dan gulped, hoping and praying that Leisha would be okay. He hadn't seemed anything like so keen to dive into the second shelter's potentially shark-infested pool as Sacco, and the fact he had unilaterally done so to protect Dan was both humbling and illuminating. They were friends, and Leisha did care. Dan could count on one hand the number of human friends who would have done such a thing for him, with Billy being one of them. And in that moment, both men dearly wished their room at least had a window facing the shelter, so they weren't just staring at each other as they waited and prayed for Leisha's return.
"Whatever happened isn't your fault," Billy said,
his expression of worry and his frequent nervous gulping heavily suggested that he was glad he hadn't dived in first after all. But just seconds later, the most welcome flash of Dan's life filled the room. Leisha was back, whatever he was going to report,
and that was the main thing. Well? Billy asked, almost beating the end of the flash.
It's safe, Leisha replied, saying nothing else and standing deathly still.
What he didn't say spoke volumes, but nowhere near so loudly as his expression. Searching for a word capable of describing the harrowed look on Leisha's face, the best Dan's mind could come up with was devastation.
Dan, Leisha went on, you need to see it. I need you to see it. We need you to see it, to help us make sense of it.
And it's definitely safe? Dan asked. Leisha, still looking distraught, nodded slowly. After what Leisha had just done for him, and with his assurance it was safe, Dan nodded right back. Let's go,